Well, good morning, everyone. We appreciate you coming out today. We started sponsoring this event several years ago, and we truly believe at the cooperative it's awfully important for people to be engaged with elected officials. Keep involved with the process, know what's happening, and that's the whole intent of a day like today, hearing from our state representative, our state senator, to know what's happening and get an update. So to that end, we hope you enjoy it today. Before we start off with that part, though, Dan Singletary, our CEO and general manager of the cooperative, is going to give you a little bit of an update on what's happening with us.
Thank you. Key word, reliability. John mentioned it, so that's really the key word that I'm going to mention today. You know, our federal government, they're putting regulations on an industry that it's causing base load power plants to be turned off, to be shut down. We're concerned about that. And these are plants that run 24/7, 365. And they're also implementing policies that is causing the demand for electricity to go up. So on one hand, you got less power plants, but on the other hand, you got more demand. I don't get it. We'll see where it goes. So there is a concern in our industry for the future, for generation in that. What's going to be taking its place? And I'm not talking just about coal plants anymore. I'm talking about gas plants could be next. So we're working on that. So what are we doing in Missouri? Well, unlike a lot of other utilities, the cooperatives in Missouri, we all work together. We're adding generation. It's about reliability of power for our members, keeping the lights on. It's a big challenge, but it's about our members. We're a co-op. We're owned by those we serve. Reliability, that's important to our members. A lot of y'all probably remember Winter Storm Uri, Winter Storm Elliott. You know, there was utilities all around our region that were having rolling blackouts. We didn't. We got close, but we didn't. And we want to keep it that way. We've got an expression called three T's: technology, transmission, and time. You've got to have the technology in place and proven for the next generation. You've got to have the transmission lines built to this new technology generation. And you've got to have time. You've got to have time. An example, a new transmission line, high voltage transmission line. From the time you start permitting to the time it's built, it can take 10 years. It's a lot of time. That's too long. So let me change a little bit. Supply chain issues. Everybody's had them, haven't we? Getting a little better, but it's expensive, isn't it? Yep. Hopefully it keeps getting better. Farm bill. We want to make sure that the funding for our infrastructure stays in place. And the programs that support economic development, we want to make sure those don't go away either. Miles gave me 2 minutes. That's my 2 minutes. Thanks for being here today.
What you guys don't know is a safety meet. Dan's 2 minutes is about 20-ish, so this was really good. All right. Before we get into the introduction of our two speakers, I would also like to recognize Megan Nicky with Congressman Smith's office today. Oh, Mike, I didn't see you back there. Mike Ussery with Senator Smith's office as well. Thank you for coming, guys. Appreciate y'all. All right. Well, last night I was getting ready for this meeting and typing up an introduction for both the senator and the representative. And usually you go through the list of accomplishments. You talk about their tenure and their service on committees and leadership and things like that. But I found it a lot easier to just wad the piece of paper up last night and talk about friendship. Both are friends to not only myself, but the cooperative in general. They're friends to everyone in this room, this city, and this county. So we'll be hearing today from our friends, Senator Esslinger and Representative Smith. Senator, I think you're the first up by luck of the draw today. Representative Evans, I'm so sorry. So sorry.
Oh, no, first.
I think he wants to go first.
Okay, that's fine. Welcome. Sorry about that.
Man. I thought we were friends. Don't even know my name.
We are.
I can tell you my family, if you don't know, has always been friends, actually far, far, far more than friends with the West Plains Chamber. It was probably the number one activity of my father, Joe Paul Evans. And I think, you know, growing up and seeing that over the years, I think that's for a couple of reasons. Certainly one is the friendship and the fellowship here. And that's no different than building a relationship in Jefferson City. You have to have that foundation. But it's also the organization that can get together and do more as a group than you can individually. And my daughter saw that in the chamber and worked all of his life to help build this group up. And I see that in Jeff. And Carl and I sat next to each other for 2 years in the House, and then she ran and won the Senate. And she couldn't be better for West Plains and Howe County than any other person I know for senator. And she's already got an opponent. I'm going to work my best. I'm going to work harder for her election next year than I am for mine, because she really does help our area, and you really need that partnership when you're in Jeff. And if anybody goes up there, you'll learn that. You've got to build that relationship not just in the House, but if we pass a whole bunch of stuff, which we normally do, they shoot it down unless you've got somebody willing to take up the mantle and get it through the Senate. And, you know, it's for good reason. We shouldn't be passing tons of bills. And they're the ones in the Senate that weed them down. But she's really done a lot to help us. Let me just mention a couple of things. We have, both of us are on appropriation. I'm on what's called budget in the House and vice chair of a subcommittee. She's on appropriation, is what they call the budget side in the Senate. It starts in the House, goes to the Senate. It's grown up to over $50 billion. It was $31 billion 5 years ago when I started. But I'd say 95% of that is not from state budget increases. It's from federal funds. Just a horrendous amount of federal money have been shipping out. And to be honest, you either try to spend it down here or in the state, or you lose it. And that money won't be around forever. One thing that a big project, I'm hoping they do it in Howe County, at least somebody does it in Howe County. Kern Electric over in Oregon County is building fiber optic throughout the county with a huge grant they received. And it's Missouri income tax free. So, wow, what a deal. I'm really hoping somebody steps up. I know the county commission is all on board now. We get complaints about that as much as anything. You know, why I moved down here, why can't I get high-speed internet out in the country? Well, it is the country. But this is maybe the first and last time for a long time if we don't jump on board somebody out there and apply for those grants and get it going here in Howe County, we may not have that tons and tons of federal money to fall back on, and it takes a lot of money. The co-op has been extremely helpful and willing to carry those lines, but it's, you know, millions and millions of dollars to install fiber optic, you know, maybe to that last house a mile away on a county road. And it's kind of hard to charge all that money to local membership for that huge expense for that one single house. But, you know, federal money available, it can be hopefully available here in Howe County. That's one of my number one goals in the next year, try to get somebody down here to get that grant so we can have fiber optic in Howe County. Through Carlos' help, we also had a $3 million grant for the hospital. This year, a large chunk of that, most of it, went to the Mountain View Clinic that they'll be building. They need all the help they can get over in Mountain View. We're also working now on a grant for the hospital over there in Mountain View. They desperately need some MRI equipment that they don't have, but that's one of the many projects we're working on. Also, Todd Richardson came down. We've all read about some of the economic issues at the Ozark Healthcare. Todd is the director of Medicaid, Medicare for the state of Missouri. He was former Speaker of the House and honestly does a fantastic job. He wants to try to get to save taxpayers' money. He wants to try to make it fair. It's a huge beast. It's our single biggest budget item in the state by far, billions of dollars. That we spend. One of the issues for the hospital, if you didn't know, is the rate plan they have for inpatient care is based on a 1990 standard. which puts them under the standard they gave the hospital in the 1990s, third to the bottom in the state as far as reimbursement from Medicaid, Medicare for inpatient care. And that's just not fair. And Todd specifically said, hey, yeah, I agree. That's not fair. We're working on that. It is a beast. It'll take us a couple years to get all the things worked out, because if you take from one pot and give it to another pot, it's a very difficult political process. But they are doing that. That is his pledge. He's also helping the hospital with some other things to try to do, from the state perspective, do as much as we can to help health care here in West Plains. One of my two biggest goals is the hospital and the college. If you look back over the last 50 years, I think those are the two of the things, two of the cores that have really helped West Plains continue its growth over the decades. Certainly business has driven that, but the foundations have been schools, hospitals in this area. A couple of the highlights of the college I mentioned. The PACE welding program, we were able to help out on that a couple years ago. This year they're doubling its size. They have already. And they employ immediately, before they graduate, every single graduate of that welding program at sometimes six-figure incomes. Some of those jobs local, some of those jobs they can travel back and forth. But it's that sort of thing I know the governor has really been excited about over the last few years. I know Carl and I have as well. High economic jobs that we can provide locally, that we can educate locally, and hopefully will stay locally. Next, I don't know if he wants me to say this, if it's even public. The school's also a college, working on an equine program, rehabilitation program, and we're going to try to hopefully get that, help them get that off the ground in the future. They've had some property donated, and I think that'll be super cool to have that program as well. In 2 weeks, there'll be the groundbreaking, November 7. There'll be some state dignitaries there, but that's the Ascend program. Is Dennis here? At the Board of Governors. Carol's here. Represent the college. But that's the autistic program. They teach the teachers, and they teach help the kids. And I personally believe, and I know Carl does too, that's maybe one of the best things I've done in Jefferson City, is to try to help get that program off the ground over the decades. You know, it'll help a lot of people, and a lot of families that really need some intensive help in their lives. So Dennis has a huge heart. It was his idea, not ours, but with his passion and Carl and I's help, we were able to get that through, and they'll be groundbreaking on that in a couple weeks. That was a pretty significant chunk of stack of change that she got and we helped get for that program. Really quick, and I'll just run through these, and if you have questions later, you can talk about them. We did a fairness in sports bill this past year. Boys can't compete in girls' high school sports. Protection of minors under 18 for gender-altering surgery, unless they're grandfathered in. The texting bill finally passed. We're the last state in the country to pass that. That was not my bill, although I filed a similar bill 5 years in a row. But basically, you can't use handheld devices in your car now. It's hard to enforce. But it's almost a liability thing as much as it is, and something the parents can tell their kids, hey, it's against the law to use your device now, operate your device, unless it's voice-activated in your car. Bail bond bill, we finally got passed. That's something I worked on to increase the standards for bail bond. Every judge, which I know locally they do, I see Judge Prevett here, they already do this, but you've got to consider threat to the community, threat to the victim, appearance, likelihood of the defendant, as key factors. You must consider those now in the courts of the state of Missouri before you grant the bond. I also worked on a privacy case bill, also involving courts. But the CaseNet system, I don't know if you've been online in that system, 2 billion hits last year, probably more than any other system in the state of Missouri. We helped with funding on that last year, but also for the first time in history, CaseNet's records, because technology is finally here and they can do it, so your divorce judgment can now be on CaseNet, at least henceforward. The problem with that is that these documents, if you sue each other in businesses, whatever, there may be a lot of confidential stuff in there that nobody wants to be mined on the internet overnight, and then all of a sudden your credit cards and your banks are all hacked. So we passed a bill that allows the courts to now make that private, henceforward, to try to keep up with that technology as it develops. Because I know the courts fight every day hackers that try to access that system, but this will give them another tool to not put that type of information on the internet. And my personal favorite, and I'll end with that and a couple of minor other things, Social Security bill. A local constituent a couple years ago asked me, why is the state of Missouri one of 12 states that still taxes Social Security retirement and disability income? Yes, Missouri's always had a poverty or low-income threshold, but why do we tax it at all? We pay in, that's a tax. We don't get back what we pay in, that's a tax. Why do we tax again when it comes out? I filed that bill 2 years ago with the help of another good senator, another contact, Luchtemeyer, Senator Luchtemeyer. It was his bill, language I filed. We worked together, and now we have no Social Security income tax in the state of Missouri. That's a $300 million tax cut, so I'm kind of happy about that. As I said, I'm not shy about it. I am working hard. I've got one more election, then I'm done. I will not run again for anything else. That's my promise. And Carl, again, already has an opponent. We will be hosting, no politics, but a fall festival, October 28, from 2 to 6 at Kevin and Brenda Smith's Victorian House on Grace, right across from my house on Grace. It's free. Everything's free for the kids. I expect a really big crowd for that, but plan out. It should be fun. Kevin and I and our families ran the Haunting in the Hollows out at Galway Creek for 9 years, so this is kind of like going home for me. And we had a haunted house before that for 15 years. So we enjoy doing that fun stuff, and invite Carla, and she's going to be a big help with that again this year. We'll save questions till you're done. We'll turn it over to you.
So there's a reason that David wanted to go first, and that's probably because, well, first he got to say some nice things about me, but the second thing was he took all my thunder. Everything that you were mentioning, we worked together on, which I want you to know, we do have a very, very special opportunity for Howe County for the 33rd District, because I do work directly with my representatives. And we get together and discuss what is it that you're carrying this year, what's important for your particular district, how can I help you, and how can we make this actually happen? Because when you think about it, there's much work that goes on up there, and then you actually see the second or third week in May how much the governor signs or doesn't sign. You just need to have a plan going forward, right? You got to have a plan going forward. So I get to do that with David, and I really appreciate it. I've got some funny stories about David when I first went to the house, And I, of course, knew David because I used to work here at the school, and sat down with David, and we're sitting next to each other looking around like, how did we get here, and where did we get to, and all those things. But I'll spare you. I'll spare you those. Because, you know, he probably has a few on me, right? So, anyway, first off, thank you all for the opportunity to come visit. I always like coming to West Plains. I always say it feels like coming home. You know, I did spend several years here in Howe County and in West Plains. And, you know, looking out across this room, I don't remember just by a show of hands, how many of you were here when I was they say once a zizzer, always a zizzer. But how many of you were in town or remember when I was working at school? So there's still a few around. Okay. Well, Wes, you remember, but you were at Kabul. Yeah. Well, how many of you remember, this is not part of the legislation, but I think it's hilarious. How many of you remember when the chamber first invited me to come visit because I was their new superintendent? And I got in front of this mic, this spot right here, and for some unknown reason decided to unveil the fact that I was a truant kid in Kansas City. What in the world was I thinking? Do you remember me doing that? You do. And how my mother brought us down to Theodosia so she could raise us in a small town because I was such a problem child. Why in the world would I decide to unravel that story the day that you first meet your superintendent? I don't know, but it happened, and you kept me around, so I guess it's okay. So, but I did remember that walking in here today. Like, I remember the first time I addressed a group of people here in West Plains. But you all didn't ask me to come in here and do a history lesson. You asked me to come in and tell you what kind of things are going on up in Jeff City. Well, I can tell you the main thing that's happening in Jeff City is we're thanking God we're not in D.C. That's what's happening in Jeff City. Thank God we've got some good leadership in the House and the Senate, and we're not in D.C. But we've got some things that we were able to get done last year, so I'll just share a few of those that David didn't mention, which is my list is very short now. But just a few things we were able to work on. So I'm very proud of the fact, and I want to tell a story about this little piece of legislation because it talks about, it truly gives you an example of what you can do if you take the time to communicate and build relationships up there. We had a little physical therapy bill, PT bill. And if you guys recall kind of the process of legislation, you file a piece of legislation, it goes through committee, it gets bounced around a little bit. Finally, it might get on a calendar. It gets on the calendar in the House. It comes through. Gets same process over in the Senate. Gets on a calendar. Finally, it'll bubble up. And then generally, people have had some opportunity to see what is called has legs legislation, which means it's moving through the process. And they look for opportunity to put their legislation on yours if they can somehow, some way, make it fit the title. That's kind of the process. I'm very, very proud of the fact that last year, with a lot of work done during interim, a lot of work done sitting down across people with a cup of coffee, having opportunity to work directly with those committees, I was able to put a PT bill, physical therapy bill, which actually it just says you have access. If you need physical therapy, you don't have to go get a doctor's prescription. You can just go ahead and go get physical therapy, and you don't have to go through that. Can you imagine, you know, I've sprained my ankle, I got to go get a script before I can go see a therapist. Seems pretty black and white that you ought to be able to have that choice as an individual. But we were able to pull that off, and we brought it in to committee, and it came to the floor, and I was able to take that piece of legislation and get it off of the Senate floor without any amendments. Because those amendments are a kiss of death, frankly. No amendments. But here's the neat part. Is not only did we have that piece of legislation that went over to the House, because here's we have 100, I always get the number wrong, David, 160?
Three.
163. And all those people have really good ideas. And here comes the very first piece of legislation. Well, don't you think they're looking at this thinking, I'm going to put something on there, I'm going to amend it with this, I'm going to do whatever. But my friends in the House rallied around, and they were able to pass that with no amendments. I don't know in the history of the state, David, have we ever done that?
Probably not. I can say one of my bills last year had 200 amendments on it.
There you go. Yeah. And I've had a few of those too. But I'm just saying, that's an example of, and it was signed by the governor in February. But that is an example of what you need to do if you really and truly want to get some good work done. You take the time to get in front of those people who don't like your legislation. You take the time to listen and really get an understanding as to why they can't support it or whatever it is, work with them, and you can actually get some things done. So that's when you see your government actually working. So we got the PT bill finished. We also, chair what used to be called professional registration or licensing. Now it's called government accountability. But through that particular committee, I was able to foster and champion, sponsor, upskilling credentials bill, which also made it across the desk for the governor. And basically that is that if you want to train your employees and you want them to have additional skills that you're going to be able to pay them a little better rate, then the state will come in and offset that by 50%. It's important for us to maintain the workforce that we have and give those people opportunity to make even more money in our state. So I think that was a pretty good bill. We carried this year also was actually the farm bill. Now, some of you who know me think, yeah, you live on a farm, but Carla, really, are you a how much do you know about cows, really? How much do you know about goats or whatever? And I tell folks, you know, when I was doing that farm bill, I was telling folks that because my district is represented by ag so heavily, I will be a champion for the ag bill. So I did carry the farm bill, and we got it passed. But I was very upfront with people, and I told them, I said, the only thing I've ever done on a farm for 42 years is open a gate. That's all I can do. That's all I've ever been trained to do is open a gate. But if you get me in a truck and put me in front of a gate, I'm out there. Okay, I can do it. I know my job. But that farm bill included some opportunities for first-generation farmers. So if you decide to sell your place and you want to sell it to a first generation, you're going to get a bit of a tax decrease, okay? It also had a lot of support for the timber industry. I felt like that the timber industry probably has not had a champion in Jeff City for many years. We hear all about buy beef, you hear all about soybean and corn, but you don't hear much about Missouri hardwoods. And so what I was able to do was to put a couple million dollars into a marketing plan, into a fund, to where we can start marketing Missouri timber, and that's going to help our tax base down here. That's going to help those folks who are making a living in that very difficult. I mean, those people work hard in the timber industry. You mentioned about the women's sports, and then I also, of course, we passed a public safety bill that has to do with some of our urban areas, kind of locking down that a little bit. Now, we did have some budget wins, as you all know, and I sit on appropriations, and I take that very seriously, and I make sure that there is a dollar floating around out there. I'm going to make it come to the 33rd. I think that's my job. That's the reason I got on appropriations, is that if it's there, and I'm going to find a home for it, and I'm going to be the person that makes sure that we deliver. I think there's been too often that we don't pay attention enough to see the opportunity that's there, and we let it kind of go to the side. So I've been able to do that. Wes, you'll be thrilled to know that we're going to continue to fund transportation at 100%. And also, I'm somebody who has always thought that if you are able to put quality early childhood programs together to where moms and dads feel comfortable about where their children are, where they're at work, that is a direct economic driver for your workforce, for your community. So I was able to work with the governor, and we did, and Wes, I don't know how much you know about this yet, but on free reduced lunch kids right now, kids who are living within a certain poverty line, some schools can pick them up and serve them in their preschool programs and receive some state dollars for that service. But there's always been a cap on the number of kids that they could serve that way. I think it's 5%. So whatever your free reduced lunch rate is, 75% generally is the average, they could only serve 5% of those kids in their preschool programs. We know that we have Head Start waiting lists. We have early childhood program waiting lists. We have people who want to work at our hospital and our industries in Howe County, but they don't have any place to take their kids. So what we're able to do is remove the cap, which means if Wes decides, he can serve all of the free-reduced lunch kids in the preschool program. And Wes, what does that do for your... Yes. Right. And the thing is that there's also dollars in there for the current providers. So we were not trying to take population away from people who currently provide for a school system. But it does give, to me, it gives everybody who employs moms and dads an opportunity to have just that one extra layer that we know is so important, make sure their kids are safe and educated. So I don't know what else. Are you guys sleepy? You guys seem so. Are you tired? What's going on?
I can't say, because I'm behind the scenes. We really in the House didn't know it was going to be added. But it's one of those good things that was added. She got this, Carla, got this preschool funding increase, a huge increase for our public schools. That's her specialty, of course, education. She's the one that got it on the budget. And then, I mean, this is the last couple of days. It was too late to take it out.
So let's tell the story.
So she got it done. One last thing, she also got funding for Highway 63.
Yeah.
And I know West Plains has not really talked up four-laning Highway 63, at least to Rolla. That was a big project of my father's, Will Thompson, and others, and some of the ones, old-timers, that worked to get the four-lane out here. But if you look at Poplar Bluff, they've worked hard as a city to get those four lanes around Poplar Bluff and now getting them. They grew 1,000 more people over the last decade than Howe County did. My guess is they'll grow 2,000 or 3,000 more than Howe County will over the next decade. And I think that's largely due to really good transportation that they saw the future 10, 20 years down the road and said, hey, this is going to be a good thing for us. I think it'll be a good thing if we can get four lane and get it down through Arkansas. I know it's more people coming through Howe County, but if you want business, if you want economic growth, that's the sort of stuff you have to have. Honestly, as a boy, I thought my dad did too much of that, but I kind of grew up. Carla's office is that was vetoed by the governor. There's a five. It's died as a project in the state of Missouri. To start it again, you got to do another study. They always require studies. It's $5 million study, I think.
Yep.
The governor vetoed that along with 500 other million-dollar special projects. But I think their office is already getting it back in the long-term plan of the highway department, which is a big chore to get them to compromise and get that done. So hopefully at least we can start the study. This will be way past my time. I'm hoping somebody will carry that torch into the future and say, hey, it would be good that we had another major highway coming through this area.
Thank you. Yeah, you can look at Springfield, Branson, Kansas City, all the way down, right, on that side of the state. Look at St. Louis, all the way down, Poplar Bluff, Boot Hill. What we don't have is a north and south corridor in the middle of the state that's truly going to give us opportunity for growth. Now, you can decide what that looks like. Right now, you can't compete. Look at these counties in the middle of the state. A lot of them are in the 33rd, and they have the lowest tax base of all the. I think there's four or five counties in my seven-county region that are on the top 10 poorest counties in the state. And I do believe that the reason it's that way is because we do not have the infrastructure, broadband, roads, to bring people in, and we also need more support for workforce for our moms and dads. Those are some things I'm super proud of that we're making some accomplishment, and I was told they're putting it back in the stiff. Do I have any commissioners in here? County commissioners? Okay. Well, I have been told that every time I go to a county commissioner meeting, they say, we've been trying to get that for 15 years. And every time we bring it up, it just never makes it to the stiff. The stiff is your state transportation infrastructure plan or whatever. And I'm being told now that it's being put on the stiff. Because, you know, when somebody tells me no, I go, that's okay. But come here, I got to talk to you some more. So I just keep moving and keep working. There's never a real no, right? You just figure out how you can get it to be a yes. So, anyway, and Carol knows that well, don't you, Carol? Has anybody ever said no to Carol and got away with it? Ever, right? But just to toot my horn a little bit, guys, I actually won some awards. I've never done this, but my campaign people say, you need to mention this, Carl. So here I am. So here it is. So I was honored to receive the Legislator of the Year Award by the Missouri Retired Teacher Association, which you would expect that, right? Because I'm an old retired teacher, so maybe they're going to, you know, thank the lady who's helping them out. But I also was a Freshman Center of the Year by the Missouri Chamber of Commerce and Industry, which I thought was pretty cool. And I also received, this one I think is absolutely hilarious. Passed a piece of legislation, they think it's just wonderful, but I'm the Legislator of the Year for the Missouri Society of Professional Surveyors. Thank you so much. I appreciate your support. Thank you. Do we have questions? We could do this together. Look at you guys. You're all just wanting to get back to work. Right? Any questions, Scott? No? No questions, Scott? Yes, sir. Open enrollment. What a hot topic. Let's just start with that one. Hey, you know what I think? I do believe that local control. I was a superintendent for many years, and Wes, you're probably, I don't know where you're at on that, Wes. My thing is that if y'all could get along, as a superintendent, I'll just tell you, when a mama came to me and said,
I'm working over here, and I can't get back by 3:15 when the bus drops my kids off. Would it be okay if I went to school but to enroll my kids over there? And you know what I would say? Sure. Let me make a call for you. So I call, and I would say, count them on your ADA. I know it's not legal, Wes. I know that's not legal, but it was the best thing for that family. And I did that, and I would do it again. What I would like to see is for there to be a regional approach to what this looks like, to have local, your boards get together, have a conversation, and then petition DESE. Don't let legislators make your school districts behave a certain way. You guys are the voice. You elect your boards, you're the ones who hire your superintendents, get together and figure out how to do this. Because I can tell you, most states have open enrollment. 30-some-odd school districts have open enrollment. Missouri has always been the show me, right? Well, I'm not sure how many more states we've got to wait to show us. But I think we need to look at how we actually hold school in our state and make sure we're doing the best for all of our kids.
And I'll respond also, West Plains actually has, it's one of the few places in the state, has open enrollment at the high school level. Every rural school, kids, the parents can elect to send their kids to a area high school. And I had a couple of superintendents who were opposed to open enrollment talk to me, and I said, well, how many of your kids go to a different high school than West Plains? About a third. I mean, it's a huge number of rural kids go to a different high school, and that's what open enrollment is. We can say it's not, but it is. That's what West Plains already has, not at the elementary school level. And the big deal and the pressure you see, I think, is coming from Washington, and I think it's a very sad state of affairs. Last year, the president, our sitting president, required all schools to open their doors to transgender policies, whatever they felt appropriate from that community, and tied it to the free school lunch program because he couldn't get it done any other way. This year, the feds are now enforcing that and going after schools that said, probably not very nicely, no, we're not going to allow boys into the girls' locker rooms or whatever. And a lot of parents are upset about that and are going to increasingly be upset about those sorts of moral or immoral guidance that the feds are trying to do in our local communities. And that's driving a lot of the demand for choices by our constituents. And quite frankly, if I was a parent, I would want to think about choices myself. Ultimately, I'm not sure how that will end up. I know it's moving forward, and I think it's driven by the, these federal regulations or laws. I know we fully funded K-12, fully funded transportation 2 years now consecutively, the first time in decades that's been done. I don't see it affecting public education dollars. The issue is, will some of those dollars, and it's a big question, start going to private schools? I got a nasty letter from a retired teacher saying, oh, you shouldn't do that. That's immoral. I know when I went to college a long, long time ago, I went to a private Methodist school. And way back when, I got money from the federal government to educate me at that private school. So the idea of it is been around for a very, very long time and been used in government for a very long time. So I know people say it's old, brand new, but it's really not. But I was opposed to it when I started. I've changed my mind because so many parents say, hey, give us a choice.
Here's where I'm at with open enrollment or any of the ed reform pieces that you see out across our state and having a conversation about. Is that my thing is that if it's a tax dollar, if it's funded by tax dollars, then let's have some consistent way to make sure that we have high-quality programs and that it is an effective system for parents and for communities and for kids to go through. I don't care if it says ABC School of the Wonderful, charter voucher, something else, whatever it is. But unless we have, and the main word here, guys, is consistent.
is that you've got to be able to measure whether or not kids are learning in those systems and then fund them. And if they're not, don't fund them. I think if we do that, we're going to end up with some pretty good schools. And I can tell you that in West Plains and in the districts that I'm very familiar with, they don't look like the ones that the people are running from. Okay? They don't. But we're still held to different standards. I still believe local control, your school boards have to get engaged and have an understanding of what's going on in your buildings, and that way you guys can make it the best possible. I always end up talking about school, but I really like workforce. So, are we done? Any more? It's 12-something, right? 12:40. Okay, let me ask you all this. So here's the teacher. So by raise of hands, what I want to know is, what do you think is the number one thing? You guys are all business, industry, right? What's the number one thing? If you could be king for a day, queen for a day, what would you change about West Plains, our community, about what's going on here? Is there something that needs to be done? I think we sit around and figure, like, when you've got 163 refs up there, 30-some-odd senators, and then you've got the whole U.S. Department, well, D.C. people, we're trying to figure out what to do, what's best. What do you think? Give me one.
I think we need tax incentives for industry to come here. We need more employment. We need more career-minded jobs.
Okay, I love that. You hear what he said? You need tax incentives for business and industry to invest. That's not exactly what you said.
More or less,
yes. Tax incentives, right? Give them a reason to come in and start doing their work. What do you think? That's not a Republican thing, by the way. I could tell you, because I passed a tax incentive thing for film, right, for the entertainment district, because I represent Branson. So I wanted to make sure that if there's going to be a Hallmark movie made, it's not going to be in Georgia. It's going to be in Branson. It's going to be in Missouri, right? Why not? So I did that. But I can tell you, being a Republican, I got criticized for that. And I bet you that's going to be one of the front runners on the brochures against me. But anyway. But yeah, you're right. I think you're right. What else, guys? Oh, come on. Yes.
I'd like to see more infrastructure for dependent children that are in the system, like more qualified foster families to serve.
Oh, yes. Hot topic right there. More opportunities for disabled children that are in the system, which we're talking about DFS, right? It's tough enough when you have a healthy, a kid that is developing on the range that they're supposed to, but when we have a child that is emotionally or physically handicapped, and then you place them in a foster system that's fragile already, yes, I agree. That's a good one. Thank you.
Just briefly mention, I found it didn't go very far this year. A little bill, I don't talk about it publicly since you mentioned that much. It would enable parents of children that are 18 that have lifetime disabilities, it would give them an easier way to go through the guardianship procedure, whether that be a parent, a grandparent, another family member, or even the state. But it would expedite that process, and the entire intent is to make it easier for those folks to streamline between services as a juvenile and an adult.
All right. Any other? I just think this is great. I've got two good ideas. Carol.
I'm not even sure how to say it, but help communities who are helping address the issue of the homeless.
Okay. All right. How many of you are aware of Grove? Let's say you're driving down 95 Highway, right? Call that a highway. I don't know. But anyway, 95. Down by where you live. All right. You're driving through there. Now, we've got a great big plot of land out there that somebody from somewhere, if it wasn't my neighbor, bought it, logged it, and then they sell it to poor guys that are St. Louis, Kansas City, someplace urban, someplace they want to get away from. I don't know. I'm assuming that. They sell them that 2-acre tract. Homesteading, and they drive down there with their camper, and they set up their house, and the next thing you know, we've got what Carol was talking about, right? How many of you guys have seen these little places
family services are going to take care of those families. We're going to try to do the best we can, but you only have so much resource.
Because it came through my committee, we did pass 2 years ago a homeless bill. If you follow the guidelines, and of course it's guidelines, regulations, there is additional state money available for local communities that develop homeless areas that also provide services such as mental health and access to health care. So it's a more organized approach. It's based on a law that was developed in Texas several years ago. I've got a storage lot, and I've got homeless moved in next door right here in town. So, and then up the street from me also. But it's a real generational problem, and it takes some creative thinking that certainly Carl and I don't have all the answers for. And if there are good answers for that, other things we need to be doing, sure, share those with us. It's easy. I'll just wave a wand and get rid of them. But it's tough. I mean, a lot of them are there for mental health reasons and other reasons. Some of them are just panhandlers. But yeah, I'd like to find a solution. Share as much information and ideas, and we'll try to come up with even better stuff.
Okay, so I think we're close to the end. Is there one more question, or are we done? All right. John, you have nothing.
I'll close it out.
All right.
What's that?
What else do you have?
We are good.
Thank you all.
Kathleen Hensley from Ken's Garage LLC came in. Kathleen, where you at? Hey, come up here. I'm going to make you famous now. We're going to take a quick picture. Kathleen at Ken's Garage is a new chamber member, and so we want to welcome her. And then we'll get on with our day. We're nearing the end of the year, and the Chamber Award Banquet in January, we always have nominations for awards. Nomination forms are on the table. Please pick one up on your way out if you would. And I can't believe the year is coming to an end that quickly. I do want to mention later today from 4 to 6 p.m., the Country Club is sponsoring a Chamber After Hours. And so we invite everybody to come out to that. You don't have to be a Country Club member. You don't even have to be a Chamber member. Please come out and do that. That's just a good opportunity for us to mix and mingle and kind of network a little bit in a little less formal setting. So invite a friend, come out to the Country Club. I think they're going to have some appetizers and things prepared for us, right? So that'll be a great time. And then I want you to, if everybody's got their brochure, I'm not going to read the list. You can read it yourself. But there are a lot of events going on. So keep that in mind. We have any 30-second announcements. Well, everyone have a wonderful afternoon. Feel free to hang around and visit. Dave and Carla, I know you have places to go, but I'm sure they'd be glad for you to stop by and say hi. And anyway, have a great day. Good to see everyone. The meeting's adjourned.